ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC Cricket Podcast time with your boys at the end of day three of the fifth test at the SCG. What a day it was in which Australia started the day. I felt they had their nose in front. Other people felt like the game was in the balance. At the end of the day, you're left with zero doubt as to who was on top in this test match. The Aussies lead by 134 runs, 7 wickets down, hundreds to Travis Head and to Steve Smith. We got a lot to chop up. My name's Corbin Middlemass. My podcast co-host Ed Cowan is in the same room, sitting right next to me for the third straight day. How good's this, Teddy?
Love it. Just any Corbin time's good time for me.
You know what this proves? Next year's, you're just going to have to come on the circuit every single test.
Oh, man. Look, if they can find the budget, it'd be nice to do the corporate box circuit all day and then just turn up and do a podcast for half an hour.
That's what you've been doing, isn't it?
That sounds like fun.
I know. Well, I actually saw you mid-play today. So usually you make the trek around other side of the ground to come visit us. But today I had a rare hour off the way the roster works. We're in 20-minute stints. And so as soon as tea finished, Stuart Clark said to me, and he's obviously on the board of New South Wales with you, which he's in the news for other reasons, which I'm so sure we'll get to. He said, I've got to go around to the Cricket New South Wales box. You want to come? I looked at him and I thought, yes, actually, I do want to come. Get out of this box, which can get a bit stuffy at the end of the day. Walked around there, and what a place to watch the cricket from, the War Room.
Absolutely magic, and it's a bit of a who's who, to be honest, between the Cricket Australia box and the Cricket New South Wales box. We had the Governor of New South Wales, we had ex-Prime Ministers, we had Test players, we had owners of 100 franchise teams, we had the chairperson of Hampshire. It was excellent. I got to interview Richard Thompson, the ECB chair, as a bit of light entertainment. Usually there's a...
Because of your media career and prowess and profile.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. Oh, some would say better at answering questions than asking them. But it was very interesting to be able to ask him about, you know, what do you think, what was the post-mortem so far on the tour, and ask him about the 100. You know, the one thing that stands out, and he set the record straight, because the day before I'd been in the Cricket Australia box, and Sir or Lord Ian Botham was talking about what a disgrace that they turned the whacker down in their preparation. They had to go to Lilac Hill. And he said, I want to set the record straight. At no stage was the whacker offered to us as a preparation venue. So, you know when you're on tour, some stories emerge. Yeah. And you don't know what's fact and what's fiction. So I said I'd put the record straight on the podcast.
Gotcha. So it wasn't offered to them. It was, I mean, whether they booked it early enough or whether they should have been a bit proactive.
Anyway, big listener to the pod, very complimentary.
Okay.
Well, so it's not, as I keep saying, it's not the number of listens, it's the quality of listens.
Yeah. Is that what we say? I don't know if that is what we say.
That's what I say.
Yeah, I'm going for the quantity. Don't worry about that. So more listeners, the merrier. I always say, tell somebody you know, even tell your friends, and tell people you don't like. Tell everyone.
Well, I say if you know the chair of the ECB, tell him.
Yes. No, that's fair enough too. Hey, shout out to him, to Richard. It's nice to hear those kind of reports coming back.
Maybe at some stage, maybe it's for our weekly pod, we can dissect the whole 20 minutes, because there were some fascinating insights into the ECB and the ICC and the primacy of Test cricket. Anyway, all the stuff we love talking about.
Yep.
And he hasn't done a lot of media, so it was a bit of a treat to get 20 minutes with him.
I feel like I'm cheating because I'm borrowing a question I asked Jason Gillespie on Grandstand at Stumps tonight, which... This is our sort of follow-up podcast, obviously, which complements each other. You can find that through the Best of ABC Sport folder for your full wrap of the day. And then you get Ed Cowan's analysis here on the ABC Cricket Podcast. But I said to him, if you were a newspaper editor and you were preparing the back page of the paper, would you be putting on Steve Smith or Travis Head on the back page as they both make centuries on day three?
Well, it depends. Is it a national newspaper?
No, give me a neutral city. Give me like Perth, for example.
Oh, well, I think that's a no-brainer.
Yep.
The photo of Travis Head, helmet on the bat, arms aloft, looking towards the O'Reilly and Trumper stands, everyone with a standing ovation at 10:15 this morning. So people piled into the ground. Travis Head's about to make 100. So people raced in, and guess what? It took him about 10 seconds, and everyone went berserk. And it was a superb 100. It was entertaining, and then we saw the fireworks after that. Steve Smith, fantastic 100. So if it was the Sydney paper, we get Smith.
Yep.
Now 300s inside of Ponting's record. Local boy, hardly played a shot in anger. I mean, can you remember, he played, a, if someone said, what was the shot of the day? I'd probably say Steve Smith's straight drive.
Yep.
What other shots did he play to... He just noodled the ball around.
And, yeah.
And we can dissect the innings in a second. So in terms of memorable moments for me, I'd have Head. And it's almost, with Travis Head, it's almost he's embracing this cult figure of I'm the entertainer. This is my, you know, Coliseum.
Yep.
And that moment felt like he was in the center of the Coliseum, all eyes on him.
With good reason. I mean, and then it so often he goes on with it. So this is 12th test 100. Seven times now he's gone 150 plus. So when he gets to 100, he goes large. But I think his high score is like 175. So he often gets out once he's passed the 150 mark. And so he did again here early in the second session.
He got bored.
I thought he did too.
He got bored. He tried to get out for about an hour. They just couldn't catch him.
Yeah.
He literally tried, like, it was fun and games for him. They'd put the field everywhere, and he just thought, oh, I'll have a bit of fun. It's backyard. I'll try and hit the ball into the gap where the fielders aren't. Gave a couple of chances. They kept spilling them. And then, you know, he obviously ate too much at lunch, came out, got out, went back and ate the lunch that he had to finish off.
Is that the, I mean, we're asking a lot of him. I mean, he's such a great player. Is that almost the next evolution? When you think about guys, then they get in like that, and that, you know, double hundreds and triple hundreds and everything else. We thought he could have made as many as he wanted to out here today, and he's in the form of his life. And there'll be another stage in his career, I'm sure, where he's short on runs, and he'll go through a series where it feels like he can't get off the mark. And yet, felt like it sounds a stupid thing to say when he made 163. But he even left a few out there today from when he did get out.
He left... pick your number out there, because there was nothing happening for England. They were bereft of ideas bowling to him. Their bowling was pathetic in the first two sessions. They found some feet later in the day. I think it comes from the mentality of batting at five. Very rarely at five do you have the opportunity to make a big double hundred or a triple hundred. But if he's going to be a long-term opener, and he should be the way this series has played out, he'll get a taste for a double hundred and etching his name into history, and no doubt that will continue. So the next evolution, I think that might be a bit much. I think it's part of the psychology of opening the batting. Setting the game up with a big hundred, a daddy hundred, is certainly something that I'm sure will come into his game.
All sorts of numbers are attached to it. The best stat that I saw, though, was the fact that he's now scored 100 at all seven Australian venues he's played at, and he becomes the first man in history to score hundreds in seven different states and territories. So the only one that he hasn't ticked off is the Northern Territory.
Guess what?
Australia's next test.
Fill your bootstrap. I mean, and that's going to be hard to beat, because there's not going to be a lot of test cricket moving forward at Manuka Oval and probably in Belrive.
Yeah.
So that could be a great... and the kind of stat that you'd crack open your beer can, your stubby, and that would be the question underneath.
Who's the only batsman to have scored 100 in all eight states and territories? He'll get that chance. He goes past 600 runs in the series. Is it time to have the debate? Is there a debate to be had about the man of the series? Or is it cut and dry, it is Mitchell Starc, don't even think about it?
Well, hang on. Are we allowed the series to finish?
We are.
Well, Mitch Starc might take 7 for 15.
Travis Head might get a match-winning... fourth innings knock.
What, of 20 not out of five balls? I don't think so. So let's save that. Save your pennies.
Yeah.
But when it matters, I think it's neck and neck at the moment.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear from you. I just wanted to hear that the
debate was on. There's no clear cut. Well, if you think about when the game was on the line in Perth, Travis Head.
Yep.
But when the game was on the line in Brisbane, Mitch Starc. And so we had the debate first test, who's man of the match, and Mitch Starc, you know, won the award when... You know, I'd probably say Travis scored one of the great Ashes hundreds of all time.
I agree with you.
And so let's just see where it falls.
Steve Smith, the other centurion in the day, of course. So he's 37th Test 100. For what it's worth, by the way, Jason Gillespie did say he would have Smith on the back page of the paper. And as the all-conquering deciding vote that I cast, I agree with him. I think the Steve Smith 100 was the moment of the day. So 13th against England. Only Bradman now has more hundreds in Ashes Test matches, and only Bradman has more runs in Ashes Test matches than Steve Smith. It felt like a kind of innings that he walked out there today and he basically said, I'm going to get 100 today. It was a determined, locked in Steve Smith obsessive about everything to the point that he's picking up off Brighton Cast at mid-off and telling him to turn his sunglasses around because the glare was getting in his eye at mid-off. It was that kind of Steve Smith mode. So
yeah.
I just wanted to give him his flowers, and I'm not saying that you're not, but I love seeing that sort of vintage Steve Smith adding to his greatness today.
Oh, look, don't get me wrong. That was a superb innings, but when you walk in at 3 for 200 and whatever he walked in at against a benign attack on a flat wicket,
yeah,
and you have Australia's best ever modern player, I mean, it is a picky number, and he showed why he is that player in my mind. And so he played with the skill and as you said, determination, because the only thing that was going to get him out was the boredom that cursed Travis Head.
First time in Test history that two of the modern greats, Joe Root and Steve Smith, score 100 in the same Test.
Interesting.
So 41 tests for Root, 37 now for Steve Smith. First time they've done it in the same Test match. All right, a couple of other talking points in the Australian innings. So Cam Green and Bo Webster, I mean, they're constantly compared to each other for obvious reasons, not just the fact they're the only two members in the team that can look each other in the eye, but also the fact that they should, or you would think they would be competing for one spot in the team. Here they are in an unusual makeup of this Australian 11 that they're playing alongside each other. And such was the night watchman last night. It means unusually they're coming in at 8 and 9 in the batting lineup. Well, Green looked really comfortable, I thought, for his 37. He turned the strike over early and played some glorious drives. And yet, same old story. He played a regrettable shot and he left plenty out there as he pulled the ball into the deep and was out for 37. And by the time we hit stumps, Bo Webster had already gone past him on the scoreboard with 42 not out. And what did you make of that so-called duel today between the two teammates?
Well, I don't like this as a starting point. They're playing on the same team and Australia in a great position. So I'll take the question as it's intended.
Yep.
And that is, on a pure head-to-head basis, what caught your eye? And for someone that
has... Do you think there's room going forward for both of them in the same team?
No, I don't.
Yep. That's all I meant by.
Yeah, sure. And so what if I was on a pure head-to-head, I'd say for a guy that hasn't played any red ball cricket for 6 weeks, Bo Webster looked as accomplished as any player all Test match. He came in, did his job, defended well, knocked the ball into the gaps, used his feet. Technically looked very strong, and probably Cam Green lined the ball up today as well as he has all summer, but it's easy to do that when the ball's, you know, not moving off the straight and it's a good batting surface. So Cameron Green will be rolling in bed tonight thinking, what have I done? Because that was the opportunity. And I think what we've seen is, at the moment, if you were to summarise this, Cameron Green is a bowling all-rounder who can bat. His bowling was pretty good the last couple of days. And that hasn't been the case. I'm just trying to summarise where they're at this point in time. He's a good, you know, fourth fast bowler who can bat at 7. Bo Webster's probably proving that he can bat higher than 7. His bowling isn't anywhere near as good as Cameron Green's. They're both good cricketers.
No doubt.
Cameron Green could prove to be a generational cricketer.
Yeah.
And so that's the hope. Unfortunately, Bo Webster probably is 6 or 7 years older. But again, we always say, Bo Webster comes into this team and lets no one down. It's like Michael Nisa. He knows his game. He's accomplished. He catches well. He provides good energy. And every time he gets the ball in his hand or the willow, you know, as he walks out, he just goes and does his job. It's hard to kind of argue against that kind of cricketer.
The other thing is too, I mean, I framed it up this way, and a lot of people around the water cooler are, as to whether it's Green or Webster. There's a spot becoming available in the middle order because Usman Khawaja's retiring, so they need a number 5. You know, Green could bat at 5, or you know, Webster bats at 5, or Carey goes up again, and all of a sudden the pair of them play alongside each other. And we know that generally that the guys that are in and around the squad often get the first look in by the time that the next Test match rolls around against Bangladesh.
Yeah, and the way this team has shaped in the last, you know, little bit, at least, it feels a very, you know, Victorian feel of lots of all-rounders. You know, if you look at the last 20 years of Victorian cricket, you know, it started with Greg Shepherd and, you know, his mentee was Andrew McDonald. Everyone does everything. And so maybe there is a world where they play alongside each other personally. And I've stopped trying to predict the selection of this cricket team because I'm just constantly wrong. I don't love both of them playing the same team alongside each other.
Usman Khawaja, was it the last time you were batting Test cricket?
Yeah, I think so. I can't see at this point in time, and you make a comment like this and Australia loses 3 for none and they chase 150
yeah,
in the last day.
Of course.
At this point in time, it looks hard. Look, and you know, you got a standing ovation on the way on, a standing ovation on the way off. I think people felt that it would be his last innings. And, you know, if you miss a full toss on middle stump, it kind of suggests that, you know, the time is right to bow out.
Oh, I didn't see anyone not standing. It was everybody.
It was sensational.
Yeah, everybody
got what he deserved.
Yeah.
He's been a great player.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. When you get out for 17, you're not really going to turn around and salute and thank everyone for their efforts. And there's a huge chance that Usman bats again in the Test match. The interesting point is, I mean, he's open for so long and now he's in the middle order.
Oh, here we go.
If they need like 40 to win or 30 to win, surely there'd be a temptation, wouldn't there, to give everybody the fairy tale ending and go, Uzzy, go and open the batting one last time.
Potentially. I hate that. Oh, my God. I have not even thought about that. But that would actually make me turn a little bit. I don't like it. For a guy that is, no comment.
There's got to be half
but maybe,
a chance.
Maybe.
Half a chance. Stumps on day three. The other talking point out of the day is clearly England's troubles. So you alluded to it up the top with your conversation, of course, with Richard Thompson, the chair of the ECB. But to me, it felt a little bit like a day where the wheels fell off for England. They took only 5 wickets. They were in the game at the start of the day, albeit it was drifting away from them. And the match felt like it just continued along the same path. They'd burnt both the reviews before the night watchman was out. And then Matthew Potts, who is on the precipice of having the worst bowling figures by an English debutant here ever. I mean, he's 141 runs on the board next to his name, wicketless, through 25 overs. And then on top of all of that, Will Jacks shelled one in the deep when Travis Head was 121, which it felt like the moment where he thought, oh boy, these days are going to get long on the back end of this tour.
It felt like the early 90s had come and slapped us in the face again. You know, when England just dropped dollies for fun. Like, that was a high ball catching practice straight down your throat, you know, chance. For a guy that is a good fielder, Matthew Potts, look, at one stage it looked as though he was going to go for a double sidecar. Like, he was going he was bowling two boundary balls and over.
He still might, yeah.
And he still might. But, you know, a couple of low full bungers and then short and wide. He had no for a guy that is known as a pitch-it-up control seamer, you feel sorry for him. It's at the end of the series and he's hardly... Well, he's played no cricket and just been running in the nets. It was... When people have days like today, I've been in the change room where that happens. I've had days like that, and there's just nowhere to hide. You feel a bit sorry for them because these are the days the selectors remember, and the selectors and the coach will say, "Oh, don't worry about it, mate. There's always another day." But don't make no mistake. It's the flags might fly at half mast tomorrow to signal the end of Matt Potts's career. That could be the end. If he goes none for 200 at the SCG, it's a long way back. Maybe, they play on a raging seamer in Chesterless Street or wherever. Maybe maybe he gets a game and he'll probably clean Australia up in 2027, having said this. But it's been pretty grim.
Stuart Clark told that story earlier in the series in that Adelaide test about Mick Lewis. In South Africa, where the selector came over to him and said, "Oh, don't worry about it, mate. Everyone has days like that every now and then." Never played again. That was the last time he ever got the chance to play for Australia. So hopefully for Matt Potts. And really, he's a bowler that's going to be way more suited to conditions in England, isn't he, than what he's got on offer out here. But the problem for him, I mean, there'll be a whole lot of scouring looking at the scoreboard and seeing his figures. But he's got to come back out tomorrow, warm up, and he'll be expected to bowl at some stage. I mean, my question is, why in both innings did Potts and Cast take the new ball? I mean, Tung looks like he's got the most control. He was threatening in Melbourne. He was the man of the match. And you could say, oh, well, he's not traditionally a new ball bowler. Well, neither is Brighton Cast. I mean, Cast had only opened 3 times previously in Test cricket up until the Adelaide Test. And now all of a sudden he's, the guy that has to lead the attack in the absence of Wood and Archer and all the guys that have broken down since Atkinson. It just felt like an odd decision that... I mean, surely you can simplify it, can't you, Teddy, where you go, let's just give the new ball to our best bowler and let them have a go at it.
Yeah, and the other one that you'd probably give it to, who looked like taking a wicket every time he touched the ball, was Ben Stokes.
Stokes, yeah.
And so Tung and Stokes, and all of a sudden Australia are 2 for 20 and has a different... sorry, not 2 for 20.
Flag.
Yeah. All of a sudden Australia lose 2 quick wickets around the new ball. And there was a moment actually at tea time. Australia, I don't know, were 30 ahead. And they came out after saying, someone asked me a question, oh, what do you think? I said, this is a big 30 minutes, because if Australia lose a couple of quick wickets, all of a sudden they might lead by 80. But if the game gets away, then, you know, the wheels are off. And sure enough, England came out, no idea, you know, set some odd fields, bowled poorly, and you looked up and Australia were 120 ahead and hadn't lost a wicket. And so you're right. I think the headline reads, wheels are off. This tour is off the rails.
Just before we get out of here, my day, I spoke about obviously what you did off the top with Richard Thompson. I mean, ours was a poor busy day for another reason, given Stuart Clark's comments leading into play on day two. All of a sudden, late in the day, an article appeared on the Nine papers, but also replicated on News Corp, and that Todd Greenberg, the chief executive of Cricket Australia, had spoken to a number of journos, essentially to address the comments that Stuart had made pre-play, where he was critical of the top brass of Australian cricket, George Bailey, Ben Oliver, and also James Allsop, the head of cricket. And essentially, Greenberg came out and referred to the comments as unwarranted and out of order. We did speak about it on Grandstand at Stumps. So if you want to hear Stuart's reaction and the audio, you can find it there for a little bit of added context. But the other part of that, the backdrop, was that no one from the Australian team was made available to speak to us at the end of the day's play. So disappointing for our audience that the members of the Australian public, and we talk about that the team being a public good and that everyone has a place in it. Ultimately, they were the people that missed out. They didn't get a chance to hear from the Australian cricket team. We'll catch up on the press conferences and so on and so forth. And at the end of the day, we've got a number of former players. We can sit around and talk to them about the issues that are going on with the cricket team. But the people we actually didn't get to hear from was the dressing room itself.
Yeah, it's I'll tread lightly here. I did read Todd's comments. And you got to remember, this is a guy that ran the NRL. This is down the list of issues he's ever had to deal with. I think I quite liked his line, you don't want to take the soap out of the soap opera.
Yeah.
Because these issues sell papers. There's been articles written already. Look, would Stu have maybe trodden slightly more lightly if given the chance? Perhaps. I don't know. I don't speak for him. One thing I do know is consistently... and it plays to them not giving you access. You host a national broadcast on a Saturday and consistently ask for a selector just to kindly ask questions around how they think about selection, and that gets turned out. So when the walls go up around any kind of team that people feel like is that they should have access to, and as you say, is a public good, then, and that consistently happens and the data builds around that, people get frustrated. It felt like the frustration was coming out. So, look, let's get on with cricket.
Yeah. I thought you addressed it well last night, by the way, where it almost... You can take a very narrow view of the issue, but I think if you take a zoomed-out view, you all of a sudden see, the build-up of, as you call them, data points that happen over a period of time. And we get to where we get to on the end of it, at the end of what should be a celebration for the Australian cricket team, the series
Absolutely.
They've had, and that they might get a chance to finally get their hands on the urn tomorrow, that of course they've already earned, pardon the pun, after the Adelaide Test and the 3-0 lead in the series, hoping to make it 4-1 here. All right, Teddy, you back again tomorrow?
I've got to do some work tomorrow. I might pop in for the Arvo session, come record live.
So I'll see you again.
Exactly.
Have it 4 out of 4. Stand by for all of that. So that'll be back here tomorrow on the ABC Cricket Podcast, every Monday and Friday and after every day's play. Catch you then, Teddy.
Later.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.